reeking to Hellas's realm with Vog blood. Manon and Asterin were soaring down the continent, back to Morath, when a soft wind, a shudder in the world, a silence. Asterin barked a cry, her wyvern banking right as if the reins had been yanked. Abraxos loosed a yelp of his own, but Manon just peered down at the land, where birds were taking flight at the shimmer that seemed to rush past. At the magic that now rippled through the world, free. Darkness embraced her. Magic. Whatever had happened, however it had been freed, Manon didn't care. That mortal human weight vanished. Strength coursed through her, coating her bones like armor. Invincible, immortal, unstoppable. Manon tipped her head back to the sky, spread her arms wide, and roared. The keep was in chaos. Witches and humans were running around, shouting. Magic. Magic was free. Not possible. But she could feel it, even with the collar around her neck and that scar on her arm. The loosing of some great beast inside her. A beast who purred at the shadow fire. Aelin crawled away from the door stained with her blood, away from the Vog prince who laughed as she clutched at her side, and inched across the bridge, her blood a smear behind her. The sun was still creeping around that tower.
Dorian,
she said, her legs pushing against the glass, her blood dribbling out from between her freezing fingers, warming them.
Remember.
The Vog prince stalked her, smiling faintly as she collapsed onto her front in the center of the bridge. The shadowed spires of the glass castle loomed around her. A tomb. Her tomb.
Dorian, remember,
she gasped out. He'd missed her heart. Barely. He said to retrieve you. But perhaps I'll have my fun first. Two knives appeared in his hands, curved and vicious. The sun began glinting just above the tower overhead.
Remember Kaol, she begged. Remember Sorsha. Remember me.
A boom shook the castle from somewhere on the other side of the building. And then a great wind, a soft wind, a lovely wind. As if the heart song of the world were carried on it. She closed her eyes for a moment and pressed her hand against her side, drawing in a breath.
We get to come back,
Aelin said, pushing her hand harder and harder into her wound until the blood stopped, until it was only her tears that flowed.
Dorian, we get to come back from this loss, from this darkness. We get to come back, and I came back for you.
She was weeping now, weeping as that wind faded away, and her wound knitted closed. The prince's daggers had gone slack in his hands, and on his finger, Athril's golden ring glowed.
Fight it,
she panted. The sun angled closer.
Fight it. We get to come back.
Brighter and brighter, the golden ring pulsed at his finger. The prince staggered back a step, his face twisting.
You human worm.
He had been too busy stabbing her to notice the ring she'd slipped onto his finger, when she'd grabbed his hand as if to shove him away.
Take it off,
he growled, trying to touch it, and hissing as though it burned.
Take it off.
Ice grew, spreading toward her, fast as the rays of sunlight that now shot between the towers, refracting across every glass parapet and bridge, filling the castle with Mala Firebringer's glorious light. The bridge. This bridge that she and Kaol had selected for this purpose, for this one moment at the apex of the solstice. Was smack in the middle of it. The light hit her, and it filled her heart with the force of an exploding star. With a roar, the Vog prince sent a wave of ice for her, spears and lances aimed at her chest. So Aelin flung her hands out toward the prince, toward her friend, and hurled her magic at him with everything she had. Chapter 75. There was fire, and light, and darkness, and ice. But the woman was there, halfway across the bridge, her hands out before her as she got to her feet. No blood leaked from where the ice had stabbed her. Only clean, polished skin peeked through the black material of her suit. Healed. With magic. All around him there was so much fire and light, tugging at him. "We get to come back," she said, as if she knew what this darkness was, what horrors existed. "Fight it!" A light was burning at his finger, a light that cracked inside him. A light that cracked a sliver into the darkness.
"Remember," she said.
Her flames tore at him, and the demon was screaming. But it did not hurt him. Her flames only kept the demon at bay.
"Remember."
A sliver of light in the blackness. A cracked doorway.
"Remember."
Over the demon screaming, he pushed, pushed, and looked out through its eyes. His eyes. And saw Selena Sardothian standing before him. Adian spat blood onto the debris. Rowan was barely remaining conscious as he leaned against the cave-in behind them, while Lorkin tried to cut a path through the onslaught of Vogue fighters. More and more poured in from the tunnels, armed and bloodthirsty, alerted by the blast. Drained and unable to summon the full depths of their magic so soon, even Rowan and Lorkin wouldn't be able to keep the Vogue occupied for long. Adian had 2 knives left. He knew they weren't getting out of these tunnels alive. The soldiers came in like an unending wave, their hollow eyes lit with bloodlust. Even down here, Adian could hear the people screaming in the streets, either from the explosion or the magic returning to flood their land. That wind, he'd never smelled anything like it. Never would again. They'd taken out the tower. They'd done it. Now his queen would have her magic. Maybe now she'd stand a chance. Adian gutted the Vogue commander nearest him, black blood splattering on his hands, and engaged the 2 that stepped in to replace him. Behind him, Rowan's breaths were rasping. 2 labored. The prince's magic, draining with his blood loss, had begun faltering moments ago, no longer able to choke the air out of the soldier's lungs. Now it was no more than a cold wind shoving against them, keeping the bulk at bay. Adian hadn't recognized Lorkin's magic, as it had blasted from him in near-invisible dark winds. But where it struck, soldiers went down and did not rise. It, too, had now failed him. Adian could scarcely lift his sword arm, just a little longer. Just a few more minutes of keeping these soldiers engaged so that his queen could remain distraction-free. With a grunt of pain, Lorkin was engulfed by 6 soldiers and shoved out of sight into the blackness. Adian kept swinging and swinging until there were no Vogue before him, until he realized that the soldiers had pulled back 20 feet and regrouped. A solid line of Vogue foot soldiers, their numbers stretching away into the gloom, stood watching him, holding their swords, waiting for the order to strike.
Too many to escape.
"It's been an honor, Prince,"
Adian said to Rowan. Rowan's only reply was a rasping breath. The Vogue commander stalked to the front of the line, his own sword out. Somewhere back in the sewer, soldiers began screaming. Lorkin, that selfish prick, must have cut a path through them after all, and run.
"Charge on my mark,"
the commander said, his black ring glinting as he lifted a hand. Adian stepped in front of Rowan, useless as it would be. They'd kill Rowan once he was dead anyway. But at least he'd go down fighting, defending his brother. At least he would have that. People were still screaming on the street above, shrieking with blind terror, the sounds of their panic growing closer, louder.
"Steady,"
the commander said to the swordsman. Adian took a breath, one of his last, he realized. Rowan straightened as best he could, stalwart against the death that now beckoned. and Adian could have sworn the prince whispered Aelin's name. More shouting from the soldiers in the back, some in the front turning to see what the panic was about behind them. Adian didn't care, not with a row of swords before them, gleaming like the teeth of some mighty beast. The commander's hand came down and was ripped clean off by a ghost leopard. For Evangeline, for her freedom, for her future. Where Lysandra lunged, slashing with claws and fangs, soldiers died. She'd made it halfway across the city before she got out of that carriage. She told Evangeline to take it all the way to the Felix country house, to be a good girl and stay safe. Lysandra had sprinted 2 blocks toward the castle, not caring if she had little to offer them in their fight, when the wind slammed into her and a wild song sparkled in her blood. Then she shed her human skin, that mortal cage, and ran, tracking the scents of her friends. The soldiers in the sewer were screaming as she tore into them, a death for every day in hell, a death for the childhood taken from her and from Evangeline. She was fury, she was wrath, she was vengeance. Adian and Rowan were backed up against the cave-in, their faces bloody and gaping, as she leaped upon the back of a sentry and shredded his spine clean out of his skin. Oh, she liked this body. More soldiers rushed into the sewers, and Lysandra whirled toward them, giving herself wholly to the beast whose form she wore. She became death incarnate. When there were none left, when blood soaked her pale fur, blood that tasted vile, she paused at last.
The palace,
Rowan gasped from where he'd slumped against the stones, Adian pressing a hand to a wound in the Fey warrior's leg. Rowan pointed to the open sewer behind them, littered with gore.
To the queen.
An order and a plea. Lysandra nodded her furry head, that disgusting blood leaking from her maw, black gore in her fangs, and bolted back the way she'd come. People screamed at the ghost leopard that shot down the street, sleek as an arrow, dodging whinnying horses and carriages. The glass castle loomed, half shrouded by the smoking ruins of the clock tower, and light, fire, exploded between its turrets.
Aelin.
Aelin was still alive, and fighting like hell. The iron gates of the castle appeared ahead, strung with reeking corpses. Fire and darkness slammed into each other atop the castle, and people fell silent as they pointed. Lysandra raced for the gates, and the crowd spied her at last, scrambling and bleeding to get out of her way. They cleared a path right to the open entrance, revealing 30 Volg guards armed with crossbows lined up in front of it, ready to fire. They all trained their weapons on her. 30 guards with bolts, and beyond them, an open path to the castle, to Aelin. Lysandra leaped. The closest guard fired a clean, spiraling shot right for her chest. She knew, with that leopard senses, that it would hit home. Yet Lysandra did not slow. She did not stop. For Evangeline, for her future, for her freedom, for the friends who had come for her. The bolt neared her heart and was knocked from the air by an arrow. Lysandra landed on the guard's face and shredded it with her claws. There was only one sharpshooter with that sort of aim. Lysandra loosed a roar and became a storm of death upon the guards nearest her, while arrows rained on the rest. When Lysandra dared look, it was in time to see Nezrin Falik draw another arrow atop the neighboring rooftop, flanked by her rebels, and fire it clean through the eye of the final guard between Lysandra and the castle.
Go!
Nezrin shouted over the panicking crowd. Flame and night warred in the highest spires, and the earth shuddered. Lysandra was already running up the sloped, curving path between the trees. Nothing but the grass and the trees and the wind. Nothing but this sleek, powerful body, her shapeshifter's heart burning, glowing, singing with each step, each curve she took, fluid and swift and free. Faster and faster, every movement of that leopard's body a joy, even as her queen battled for her kingdom and their world, high, high above. Chapter 76. Aelin panted, fighting against the throbbing in her head. Too soon. Too much power too soon. She hadn't had time to draw it up the safe way, spiraling slowly to its depths. Shifting into her fey form hadn't helped. It had only made the Vog smell worse. Dorian was on his knees, clawing at his hand, where the ring kept glowing, branding his flesh. He sent darkness snapping for her again and again, and each time she slammed it away with a wall of flame. But her blood was heating.
"Try, Dorian,"
she begged, her tongue like paper in her parched mouth.
"I will kill you, you fey bitch."
A low laugh sounded behind her. Aelin half turned, not daring to put her back to either of them, even if it meant exposing herself to the open fall. The King of Otterland stood in the open doorway at the other end of the bridge.
"Kaol."
"Such a noble effort from the captain. To try to buy you time so you might save my son."
She'd tried. Tried, but
punish her,
the demon hissed from the other end of the bridge.
"Patience."
But the king stiffened as he took in the gold ring burning on Dorian's hand.
That harsh, brutal face tightened. "What have you done?"
Dorian thrashed, shuddering, and let out a scream that set her fey ears ringing. Aelin drew her father's sword.
"You killed Kaol,"
she said, the words hollow.
"The boy didn't even land a single blow,"
he smirked at the sword of Orinth.
"I doubt you will either."
Dorian went silent. Aelin snarled.
"You killed him!"
The king approached, his footfalls thudding on the glass bridge.
"My one regret,"
the king said to her,
"is that I did not get to take my time."
She backed up a step, just one. The king drew Nothung.
"I'll take my time with you, though."
Aelin lifted her sword in both hands. Then,
"What did you say?"
"Dorian." The voice was hoarse, broken. The king and Aelin both turned toward the prince. But Dorian's eyes were on his father, and they were burning like stars.
"What did you say about Kaol?"
The king snapped.
"Silence!"
"Did you kill him?"
Not a question. Aelin's lips began trembling, and she tunneled down, down, down inside herself.
"And if I did?"
the king said, brows high.
"Did you kill Kaol?"
The light at Dorian's hand burned and burned. But the collar remained around his neck.
"You,"
the king snapped. And Aelin realized he meant her, just as a spear of darkness shot for her so fast, too fast. The darkness shattered against a wall of ice. Dorian. His name was Dorian. Dorian Havilyard, and he was the crown prince of Otterlin. And Selena Sardothian, Aelin Galathinius, his friend, she had come back for him. She faced him, an ancient sword in her hands.
"Dorian?"
she breathed. The demon inside him was screaming and pleading, ripping at him, trying to bargain. A wave of black slammed into the shield of ice he'd thrown up between the princess and his father. Soon, soon the king would break through it. Dorian lifted his hands to the wordstone collar, cold, smooth, thrumming.
"Don't,"
the demon shrieked.
"Don't!"
There were tears running down Aelin's face, as Dorian gripped the black stone encircling his throat. And, bellowing his grief, his rage, his pain, he snapped the collar from his neck. Chapter 77. The wordstone collar broke in two, severing along a hairline fracture where the ring's power had sliced through. Dorian was panting, and blood was running from his nose, but...
Aelin,
he gasped out, and the voice was his. It was him. She ran, sheathing the sword of Orinth, reaching his side as the wall of ice exploded beneath a hammer of darkness. The king's power surged for them, and Aelin flung out a single hand. A shield of fire blasted into existence, and the darkness was shoved back.
Neither of you are leaving here alive,
the king said, his rough voice slithering through the fire. Dorian sagged against her, and Aelin slipped a hand around his waist to hold him up. Pain flickered in her gut, and a throbbing began in her blood. She couldn't hold out, not so unprepared, even as the sun held at its peak, as if Mala herself willed it to linger just a little longer to amplify the gifts she'd already showered on a princess of Terrasen.
Dorian,
Aelin said, pain lancing down her spine as burnout neared. He turned his head, an eye still on the wall of flickering flames. Such pain, and grief, and rage in those eyes. Yet somehow, beneath it all, a spark of spirit, of hope. Aelin extended her hand, a question and an offer and a promise.
To a better future, she said.
You came back,
he said, as if that were an answer. They joined hands. So the world ended, and the next one began. They were infinite. They were the beginning and the ending. They were eternity. The king standing before them gaped as the shield of flame died out to reveal Aelin and Dorian, hand in hand, glowing like newborn gods as their magic entwined.
You're mine,
the man raged. He became darkness, folded himself into the power he carried, as if he were nothing but malice on a dark wind. He struck them, swallowed them. But they held tighter to each other, past and present and future, flickering between an ancient hall and a mountain castle perched above Orinth, a bridge suspended between glass towers, and another place, perfect and strange, where they had been crafted from stardust and light. A wall of night knocked them back, but they could not be contained. The darkness paused for breath. They erupted. Rowan blinked against the sunlight as it poured from beyond Adian. Soldiers had infiltrated the sewers again, even after Lysandra had saved their sorry asses. Lorcan had rushed back, bloodied, and told them the way out was barred, and whatever way Lysandra had gotten in was now overrun. With battlefield efficiency, Rowan had healed his leg as best he could with his remaining power. While he'd patched himself up, bone and skin knitting together hastily enough to make him bark in pain, Adian and Lorcan clawed a path through the cave-in, just as the sewer had filled with the sounds of the soldiers rushing in. They'd hauled ass back to the castle grounds, where they hit another cave-in. Adian had started ripping at the top of it, shouting and roaring at the earth as if his will alone could move it. But now there was a hole. It was all Rowan needed. Rowan shifted, his leg flashing in agony as he exchanged his limbs for wings and talons. He loosed a cry, shrill and raging. A white-tailed hawk soared out of the small opening, past Adian. Rowan did not linger as he took in his surroundings. They were somewhere in the castle gardens, the glass castle looming beyond. The reek of the smoke from the ruin of the clock tower clogged his senses. Light exploded from the uppermost castle spires, so bright that he was blinded for a moment. Aelin. Alive. Alive. He flapped, bending the wind to his will with the dregs of his magic, soaring faster and faster. He sent another wind toward the clock tower, rerouting the smoke toward the river, away from them. Rowan rounded the corner of the castle. He had no words for what he saw. The King of Otterland bellowed as Aelin and Dorian fractured his power. Together they broke down every spell, every ounce of evil that he'd bent and shackled to his command. Infinite. Dorian's power was infinite. They were full of light, of fire and starlight and sunshine. They overflowed with it as they snapped the final tether on the king's power and cleaved his darkness away, burning it up until it was nothing. The king fell to his knees, the glass bridge thudding with the impact. Aelin released Dorian's hand. Cold emptiness flooded her so violently that she too fell to the glass floor, gulping down air, reeling herself back in, remembering who she was. Dorian was staring at his father, the man who had broken him, enslaved him. In a voice she had never heard, the king whispered,
"My boy."
Dorian didn't react. The king gazed up at his son, his eyes wide, bright, and said again,
"My boy."
Then the king looked to where she was on her knees, gaping at him.
"Have you come to save me at last, Aelin Galathinius?"
Chapter 78. Aelin Galathinius stared at the butcher of her family, her people, her continent.
"Don't listen to his lies,"
Dorian said, flat and hollow. Aelin studied the king's hand, where the dark ring had been shattered away. Only a pale band of skin remained.
"Who are you?" she said quietly.
"Human." More and more the king looked.
"Human. Softer."
The king turned to Dorian, exposing his broad palms.
"Everything I did, it was all to keep you safe. From him."
Aelin went still.
"I found the key,"
the king went on, the words tumbling out.
"I found the key and brought it to Morath. And he, Parrington, we were young, and he took me under the keep to show me the crypt, even though it was forbidden. But I opened it with the key."
Tears, real and clear, flowed down his ruddy face.
"I opened it, and he came. He took Parrington's body and..."
He gazed at his bare hand, watched it shake.
"He let his minion take me."
"That's enough," Dorian said. Aelin's heart stumbled.
"Erewhon is free," she breathed.
And not only free. Erewhon was Parrington. The Dark King himself had manhandled her, lived in this castle with her, and had never known, by luck or fate or Elena's own protection, that she was here. She had never known either, never detected it on him.
Gods above.
Erewhon had forced her to bow that day in Endovir, and neither of them had scented or marked what the other was. The king nodded, setting his tears splattering on his tunic.
"The eye. You could have sealed him back in with the eye."
The look on the king's face when she'd revealed the necklace. He'd been seeing a tool not of destruction, but of salvation. Aelin said, "How is it possible he's been inside Parrington all this time and no one noticed?"
"He can hide inside a body like a snail in its shell, but cloaking his presence also stifles his own abilities to scent others, like you. And now you are back. All the players in the unfinished game. The Galathinius line, and the Havilyard, which he has hated so fiercely all this time. Why he targeted my family, and yours."
"You butchered my kingdom,"
she managed to say. That night her parents died. There had been that smell in the room. The scent of the Vog. "You slaughtered millions."
"I tried to stop it."
The king braced a hand on the bridge, as if to keep from collapsing under the weight of the shame now coating his words.
"They could find you based on your magic alone, and wanted the strongest of you for themselves. And when you were born..."
His craggy features crumpled as he again addressed Dorian.
"You were so strong, so precious. I couldn't let them take you. I wrested control away for just long enough."
"To do what?"
Dorian said hoarsely. Aelin glanced at the smoke wafting toward the river far beyond.
"To order the towers built," she said,
"and use that spell to banish magic." And now that they had freed magic, the magic wielders would be sniffed out by every Vog demon in Irelia. The king gasped a shuddering breath.
"But he didn't know how I'd done it. He thought the magic vanished as punishment from our gods,
and knew nothing of why the towers were built. All this time I used my strength to keep the knowledge of it away from him. From them, all my strength, so I could not fight the demon. Stop it when it did those things. I kept that knowledge safe.
He's a liar, Dorian said, turning on his heel. There was no mercy in his voice. I still wound up able to use my magic. It didn't protect me at all. He'll say anything.
The wicked will tell us anything to haunt our thoughts long after, Nehemia had warned her.
I didn't know, the king pleaded. Using my blood in the spell must have made my line immune. It was a mistake. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. My boy, Dorian.
You don't get to call him that, Aelin snapped. You came to my home and murdered my family.
I came to find you. I came to have you burn it out of me,
the king sobbed.
Aelin of the Wildfire. I tried to get you to do it, but your mother knocked you unconscious before you could kill me. And then the demon became so devoted to wiping out your line after that. So no fire could ever cleanse him from me.
Aelin's blood turned to ice.
No.
No, it couldn't be true. Couldn't be right.
All of it was to find you,
the king said to her.
So you could save me. So you could end me at last. Please, do it.
The king was weeping now, and his body seemed to waste away bit by bit, his cheeks hollowing out, his hands thinning. As if his life force and the demon prince inside him had indeed been bonded, and one could not exist without the other.
Kaol is alive,
the king murmured through his emaciated hands, lowering them to reveal red-rimmed eyes, already milky with age.
Broken, but I didn't make the kill. There was a light around him. I left him alive.
A sob ripped from her throat. She had hoped, had tried to give him a shot at survival.
You are a liar,
Dorian said again, his voice cold, so cold.
And you deserve this.
Light sparked at Dorian's fingertips. Aelin mouthed his name, trying to reel herself back in, gather her wits. The demon inside the king had hunted her not because of the threat Terrasen posed, but for the fire in her veins. The fire that could end them both. She lifted a hand as Dorian stepped toward his father. They had to ask more, learn more. The crown prince tipped his head back to the sky and roared, and it was the battle cry of a god. Then the glass castle shattered. Chapter 79. The bridge exploded from beneath her, and the world turned into shards of flying glass. Aelin plummeted into open air, towers crashing down around her. She flung out her magic in a cocoon, burning through the glass as she fell and fell and fell. People were screaming. Screaming as Dorian brought the castle down for Kaol, for Sorsha, and sent a tidal wave of glass rushing toward the city lying below. Down and down Aelin went, the ground surging up, the buildings around her rupturing, the light so bright on all the fragments. Aelin pulled out every last drop of her magic as the castle collapsed, the lethal wave of glass cascading toward Rifthold. Wildfire raced for the gates, raced against the wind, against death. And as the wave of glass crested the iron gates, shredding through the corpses tied there as if they were paper, a wall of fire erupted before it, shooting sky high, spreading wide, halting it. A wind shoved against her, brutal and unforgiving, her bones groaning as it pushed her up, not down. She didn't care. Not when she yielded the entirety of her magic, the entirety of her being, to holding the barrier of flame now shielding Rifthold. A few more seconds, then she could die. The wind tore at her, and it sounded like it was roaring her name. Wave after wave of glass and debris slammed into her wildfire. But she kept that wall of flame burning. For the royal theater, and the flower girls at the market. For the slaves and the courtesans and the Falik family. for the city that had offered her joy and pain, death and rebirth, for the city that had given her music. Aelin kept that wall of fire burning bright. There was blood raining down among the glass, blood that sizzled on her little cocoon aflame, reeking of darkness and pain. The wind kept blowing, until it swept that dark blood away. Still, Aelin held the shield around the city, held on to the final promise she'd made to Kaol.
I'll make it count.
She held on until the ground rose up to meet her, and she landed softly in the grass. Then darkness slammed into the back of her head.
The world was so bright.
Aelin Galathinius groaned as she pushed herself onto her elbows, the small hill of grass beneath her untouched and vibrant.
Only a moment.
She'd been out for only a moment. She raised her head, her skull throbbing as she shoved her unbound hair from her eyes and looked at what she had done. What Dorian had done. The glass castle was gone. Only the stone castle remained, its gray stones warming under the midday sun. And where a cascade of glass and debris should have destroyed a city, a massive, opaque wall glittered. A wall of glass, its upper lip curved as if it had indeed been cresting a wave. The glass castle was gone. The king was dead, and Dorian, Aelin scrambled up, her arms buckling under her. There, not 3 feet away, was Dorian, sprawled on the grass, eyes closed. But his chest was rising and falling. Beside him, as if some benevolent god had indeed been looking after them, lay Kaol. His face was bloody, but he breathed. No other wounds that she could detect. She began shaking. She wondered if he had noticed when she'd slipped the real eye of Elena into his pocket as she'd fled the throne room. The scent of pine and snow hit her, and she realized how they had survived the fall. Aelin got to her feet, swaying. The sloping hill down to the city had been demolished, its trees and lampposts and greenery shredded by the glass. She didn't want to know about the people who had been on the grounds, or in the castle. She forced herself to walk. Toward the wall, toward the panicked city beyond, toward the new world that beckoned. 2 scents converged, then a third, a strange wild scent that belonged to everything and nothing. But Aelin did not look at Adian, or Rowan, or Lysandra, as she descended the hill to the city. Every step was an effort, every breath a trial to pull herself back from the brink, to hold on to the here and now, and what had to be done. Aelin approached the towering glass wall that now separated the castle from the city, that separated death from life. She punched a battering ram of blue flame through it. More yelling arose as the flame ate away at the glass, forming an archway. The people beyond, crying and holding one another, or gripping their heads or covering their mouths, went quiet as she strode through the door she'd made. The gallows still stood just beyond the wall. It was the only raised surface that she could see. Better than nothing. Aelin ascended the butchering block, her court falling into rank behind her. Rowan was limping, but she didn't allow herself to examine him, to even ask if he was all right. Not yet. Aelin kept her shoulders back, her face grave and unyielding as she stopped at the edge of the platform. Your king is dead, she said. The crowd stirred. Your prince lives.
All hail Dorian Havilliard,
someone shouted down the street. No one else echoed it. My name is Aelin Ashriver Galathinius, she said, and I am the Queen of Terrasen. The crowd murmured. Some onlookers stepped away from the platform. Your prince is in mourning. Until he is ready, this city is mine. Absolute silence. If you loot, if you riot, if you cause one lick of trouble, she said, looking a few in the eye, I will find you and I will burn you to ash. She lifted a hand, and flames danced at her fingertips, If you revolt against your new king, if you try to take his castle, then this wall, she gestured with her burning hand, will turn to molten glass and flood your streets, your homes, your throats. Aelin lifted her chin, her mouth cutting a hard, unforgiving line as she surveyed the crowd filling the streets, people craning to see her, see the fey ears and elongated canines, see the flames flickering around her fingers. I killed your king. His empire is over. Your slaves are now free people. If I catch you holding on to your slaves, if I hear of any household keeping them captive, you are dead. If I hear of you whipping a slave or trying to sell one, you are dead. So I suggest that you tell your friends and families and neighbors. I suggest that you act like reasonable, intelligent people. And I suggest that you stay on your best behavior until your king is ready to greet you, at which time I swear on my crown that I will yield control of this city to him. If anyone has a problem with it, you can take it up with my court. She motioned behind her. Rowan, Adian, and Lysandra, bloodied, battered, filthy, grinned like hellions. Or, Aelin said, the flames winking out on her hand, you can take it up with me. Not a word. She wondered whether they were breathing. But Aelin didn't care as she strode off the platform, back through the gate she'd made, and all the way up the barren hillside to the stone castle. She was barely inside the oak doors before she collapsed to her knees and wept. Chapter 80. Aelin had been in the dungeon so long that she'd lost track of time. But she'd felt that ripple in the world, could have sworn she heard the wind singing her name, heard panicked shouts, and then nothing. No one explained what it was, and no one came. No one was coming for her. She wondered how long Vernon would wait before he gave her to one of those things. She tried counting meals to track time. But the food they gave her was the same for breakfast and dinner, and her mealtimes changed around, as if they wanted her to lose track. As if they wanted her to fold herself into the darkness of the dungeon, so that when they came for her, she'd be willing, desperate just to see the sun again. The door to her cell clicked open, and she staggered to her feet as Vernon slipped inside. He left the door ajar behind him, and she blinked at the torchlight as it stung her eyes. The stone hallway beyond was empty. He probably hadn't brought guards with him. He knew how futile running would be for her.
I'm glad to see they've been feeding you.
A shame about the smell, though.
She refused to be embarrassed by it. Smell was the least of her concerns. Aelin pressed herself against the slick, freezing stone wall. Maybe if she got lucky, she'd find a way to get the chain around his throat.
I'll send someone to clean you up tomorrow.
Vernon began to turn, as if his inspection were done.
For what?
She managed to ask. Her voice was already hoarse with disuse. He looked over his thin shoulder.
Now that magic has returned.
Magic. That was what the ripple had been.
I want to learn what lies dormant in your bloodline. Our bloodline. The Duke is even more curious what will come of it.
Please, she said. I'll disappear. I'll never bother you. Perrant is yours. It's all yours. You've won. Just let me go.
Vernon clicked his tongue.
I do like it when you beg.
He glanced into the hall beyond and snapped his fingers.
Cormac?
A young man stepped into view. He was a man of unearthly beauty, with a flawless face beneath his red hair. But his green eyes were cold and distant, horrific. There was a black collar around his throat. Darkness leaked from him in tendrils, and as his eyes met with hers, memories tugged at her, horrible memories, of a leg that had slowly broken, of years of terror, of...
Leash it,
Vernon snapped.
Or she'll be no fun for you tomorrow.
The red-haired young man sucked the darkness back into himself, and the memories stopped. Aelin vomited her last meal onto the stones, Vernon chuckled. Don't be so dramatic, Aleed. A little incision, a few stitches, and you'll be perfect.
The demon prince smiled at her.
You'll be given into his care afterward to make sure that everything takes as it should. But with magic so strong in your bloodline, how could it not? Perhaps you'll outshine those yellow legs. After the first time, Vernon mused, maybe His Highness will even perform his own experiments with you. The acquaintance that sold him out mentioned in his letter that Cormac enjoyed playing with young women when he lived in Rifthold.
Oh gods, oh gods, why?
She begged, why?
Vernon shrugged.
Because I can.
He walked out of the cell, taking the demon prince, her betrothed, with him. As soon as the door clicked shut, Aleed bolted for it, yanking on the handle, tugging until the metal bit into her hands and rubbed them raw, begging Vernon, begging anyone to hear her, remember her. But there was no one. Manon was more than ready to fall into bed at last, after all that had happened. She hoped that the young queen was lingering around Rifthold and had understood the message. The halls of the keep were in an uproar, bustling with messengers who avoided looking at her. Whatever it was, she didn't care. She wanted to bathe and then sleep. For days. When she awoke, she'd tell Aleed what she'd learned about her queen. The final piece of the life debt she owed. Manon shouldered into her room. Aleed's pallet of hay was tidy. The room spotless. The girl was probably skulking about somewhere, spying on whoever seemed most useful to her. Manon was halfway to the bathing room when she noticed the smell. Or lack of it. Aleed's scent was worn, stale, as if she hadn't been here for days. Manon looked toward the fire. No embers. She reached a hand over it, not a hint of warmth. Manon scanned the room. No signs of a struggle, but... Manon was out the door the next moment, headed back downstairs. She made it 3 steps before her prowl turned into a full-on sprint. She took the stairs 2 and 3 at a time and leaped the last 10 feet onto the landing, the impact shuddering through her legs, now strong, so wickedly strong, with magic returned. If there had been a time for Vernon to get back at her for taking Aleed from him, it would have been while she was away. And if magic ran in Aleed's family along with the Iron Teeth blood in her veins, its return might have awakened something.
They want kings,
Caltaine had said that day. Hall after hall, stairwell after stairwell, Manon ran, her iron nails sparking as she gripped corners to swing herself around. Servants and guards darted out of her way. She reached the kitchens moments later, Iron Teeth out. Everyone went dead silent as she leaped down the stairs, heading right for the head cook. Where is she? The man's ruddy face went pale.
Who?
The girl, Aleed. Where is she? The cook's spoon clattered to the floor.
I don't know. I haven't seen her in days, wing leader. She sometimes volunteers at the laundry, so maybe...
Manon was already sprinting out. The head laundress, a haughty bull, snorted and said she hadn't seen Aleed, and perhaps the cripple had gotten what was coming to her. Manon left her screaming on the floor, 4 lines gouged across her face. Manon hurtled up the stairs and across an open stone bridge between 2 towers, the black rock smooth against her boots. She had just reached the other side when a woman shouted from the opposite end of the bridge,
"Wing leader!"
Manon slammed to a stop so hard she almost collided with the tower wall. When she whirled, a human woman in a homespun gown was running for her, reeking of whatever soaps and detergents they used in the laundry. The woman gulped down great breaths of air, her dark skin flushed. She had to brace her hands on her knees to catch her breath, but then she lifted her head and said,
"One of the laundresses sees a guard who works in the keep dungeons. She said that Aleed's locked up down there. No one's allowed in but her uncle. Don't know what they're planning to do, but it can't be good."
What dungeons?
There were three different ones here, along with the catacombs in which they kept the Yellowlegs coven.
She didn't know. He'll only tell her so much. Some of us girls were trying to see if there was anything to be done, but...
Tell no one that you spoke to me. Manon turned. Three dungeons, three possibilities.
Wing leader,
the young woman said. Manon looked over her shoulder. The woman put a hand on her heart.
Thank you.
Manon didn't let herself think about the laundress's gratitude, or what it meant for those weak, helpless humans to have even considered trying to rescue a lead on their own. She did not think that woman's blood would be watery or taste of fear. Manon launched into a sprint, not to the dungeon, but to the witch's barracks. To the 13. Chapter 81. Elide's uncle sent two stone-faced female servants down to scrub her, both bearing buckets of water. She tried to fight when they stripped her, but the women were walls of iron. Any sort of blackbeak blood in Elide's veins, she realized, had to be the diluted kind. When she was naked before them, they dumped the water on her and attacked her with their brushes and soaps, not even hesitating as they washed her everywhere, even when she shrieked at them to stop. A sacrificial offering, a lamb to the slaughter. Shaking, weak from the effort of fighting them, Elide had hardly any strength to retaliate as they dragged combs through her hair, yanking hard enough that her eyes watered. They left it unbound and dressed her in a plain green robe, with nothing beneath. Elide begged them over and over. They might as well have been deaf. When they left, she tried to squeeze out the cell door after them. The guards shoved her back in with a laugh. Elide backed up until she was pressed against the wall of her cell. Every minute was closer to her last. A stand. She'd make a stand. She was a blackbeak, and her mother had secretly been one, and they would both go down swinging. Force them to gut her, to kill her before they could touch her, before they could implant that stone inside her, before she could birth those monsters. The door clicked open. Four guards appeared.
The prince is waiting in the catacombs.
Elide dropped to her knees, shackles clanking.
Please, please.
Now.
Two of them shoved into the cell, and she couldn't fight back against the hands that grabbed under her arms and dragged her toward that door. Her bare feet tore on the stones as she kicked and thrashed, despite the chain, trying to claw free. Closer and closer, they hauled her like a bucking horse toward the open cell door. The two waiting guards sniggered, eyes on the flap of the robe that fell open as she kicked, revealing her thighs, her stomach, everything to them. Elide sobbed, even as she knew the tears would do her no good. They just laughed, devouring her with their eyes. Until a hand with glittering iron nails shoved through the throat of one of them, puncturing it wholly. The guards froze, the one at the door whirling at the spray of blood. He screamed as his eyes were slashed into ribbons by one hand, his throat shredded by another. Both guards collapsed to the ground, revealing Manon Blackbeak standing behind them. Blood ran down her hands, her forearms. And Manon's golden eyes glowed as if they were living embers as she looked at the two guards gripping Elide, as she beheld the disheveled robe. They released Elide to grab their weapons, and she sagged to the floor. Manon just said, "You're already dead men." And then she moved. Elide didn't know if it was magic, but she'd never seen anyone in her life move like that, as if she were a phantom wind. Manon snapped the neck of the first guard with a brutal crunch. As the second lunged for her, Elide scrambling out of the way, Manon only laughed and twirled away, moving behind him to plunge her hand into his back, into his body. His shriek blasted through the cell. Flesh tore, revealing a white column of bone, his spine, which she gripped, her nails shredding deep, and broke in two. Elide trembled at the man who fell to the ground, bleeding and broken, and at the witch standing over him, bloodied and panting, the witch who had come for her.
"We need to run,"
Manon said. Manon knew rescuing a lead would be a statement, and knew there were others who would want to make it with her. But chaos had broken out in the keep, as she had raced to summon her 13. News had come. The King of Otterlin was dead, destroyed by Aelin Galathinius. She had shattered his glass castle, used her fire to spare the city from a deadly wave of glass, and declared Dorian Havilyard King of Otterlin. The witch killer had done it. People were in a panic. Even the witches were looking to her for answers. What would they do now that the mortal king was dead? Where would they go? Were they free of their bargain? Later. Manon would think of those things later. Now she had to act. So she had found her 13 and ordered them to get the wyverns saddled and ready. 3 dungeons. Hurry, Blackbeak, whispered a strange, soft female voice in her head that was at once old and young and wise. You race against doom. Manon had hit the nearest dungeon, Asterin, Sorrel, and Vesta at her back, the green-eyed demon twins behind them. Men began dying, fast and bloody. No use arguing, not when the men took one look at them and drew their weapons. The dungeon held rebels of all kingdoms, who pleaded for death when they saw them, in such states of unspeakable torment that even Manon's stomach turned. But no sign of a lead. They had swept the dungeon, Faelene and Fallon lingering to make sure they hadn't missed anything. The second dungeon held more of the same. Vesta stayed this time to sweep it again. Faster, Blackbeak, that wise female voice begged her, as if there were only so much she might interfere. Faster. Manon ran like hell. The third dungeon was above the catacombs, and so heavily guarded that black blood became a mist around them as they launched themselves into tier after tier of soldiers. Not one more. Not one more female would she allow them to take. Sorrel and Asterin plunged into the soldiers, plowing a path for her. Asterin ripped out the throat of one man with her teeth while she gutted another with her nails. Black blood sprayed from Asterin's mouth as she pointed to the stairs ahead and roared, Go! So Manon had left her second and third behind, leaping down the stairs, around and around. There had to be a secret entrance from these dungeons into the catacombs, some quiet way to transport a lead. Faster, Blackbeak, that sage voice barked. And as a little wind pushed at Manon's feet, as if it could hurry her along, she knew that it was a goddess peering over her shoulder, a lady of wise things, who perhaps had watched over a lead her entire life, muted without magic, but now that it was free. Manon hit the lowest level of the dungeon, a mere floor above the catacombs. Sure enough, at the end of the hall, a door opened onto a descending staircase. Between her and that staircase were 2 guards sniggering at an open cell door as a young woman begged for their mercy. It was the sound of a lead's weeping, that girl of quiet steel and quicksilver wit who had not wept for herself or her sorry life, only faced it with grim determination that made Manon snap entirely. She killed those guards in the hall. She saw what they had been laughing at. The girl gripped between 2 other guards, her robe tugged open to reveal her nakedness, the full extent of that ruined leg. Her grandmother had sold them to these people. She was a Blackbeak. She was no one's slave, no one's prize horse to breed. Neither was a lead. Her wrath was a song in her blood, and Manon had merely said, You're already dead men, before she unleashed herself on them. When she'd chucked the last guard's body onto the ground, when she was covered in black and blue blood, Manon looked at the girl on the floor. Alid tugged her green robe shut, shaking so badly Manon thought she'd puke. She could smell vomit already in the cell. They had kept her here, in this rotting place. We need to run, Manon said. Alid tried to rise, but couldn't so much as get to her knees. Manon stalked to her, helping the girl to her feet, leaving a smear of blood on her forearm. Alid swayed, but Manon was looking at the old chain around her ankles. With a swipe of her iron nails, she snapped through it. She'd unlock the shackles later.
Now, Manon said, tugging a lead into the hall.
There were more soldiers shouting from the way she'd come, and Asterin and Sorrel's battle cries rang out down the stairs. But behind them, from the catacombs below, more men. Volg, curious about the clamor leaking in from above. Bringing a lead into the melee might very well kill her. But if the soldiers from the catacombs attacked from behind, worse, if they brought one of their princes. Regret. It had been regret she'd felt that night she'd killed the Kraken. Regret and guilt and shame. For acting on blind obedience. For being a coward when the Kraken had held her head high and spoken truth.
They have made you into monsters. Made, Manon. And we feel sorry for you.
It was regret that she'd felt when she heard Asterin's tale, for not being worthy of trust. And for what she had allowed to happen to those yellow legs. She did not want to imagine what she might feel should she bring a lead to her death. Or worse. Brutality. Discipline. Obedience. It did not seem like a weakness to fight for those who could not defend themselves. Even if they weren't true witches. Even if they meant nothing to her. We're going to have to battle our way out, Manon said to Elide. But the girl was wide-eyed, gaping at the cell doorway. Standing there, her dress flowing around her like liquid night, was Kaltane. Chapter 82 Elide stared at the dark-haired young woman. And Kaltane stared back. Manon let out a warning snarl.
Unless you want to die, get the rutting hell out of the way.
Kaltane, her hair unbound, her face pale and gaunt, said,
They are coming now, to find out why she has not yet arrived.
Manon's bloodied hand was sticky and damp as it clamped around Elide's arm and tugged her toward the door. The single step, the freedom of movement without that chain. Elide almost sobbed. Until she heard the fighting ahead. Behind them, from the dark stairwell at the other end of the hall, the rushing feet of more men approached from far below. Kaltane stepped aside as Manon pushed past.
Wait, Kaltane said. They will turn this keep upside down looking for you. Even if you get airborne, they will send out riders after you and use your own people against you, Blackbeak.
Manon dropped Elide's arm. Elide hardly dared to breathe as the witch said. How long has it been since you destroyed the demon inside that collar, Kaltane? A low, broken laugh.
A while.
Does the Duke know?
My dark liege sees what he wants to see.
She shifted her eyes to Elide. Exhaustion, emptiness, sorrow, and rage danced there together.
Remove your robe and give it to me.
Elide backed up a step.
What?
Manon looked between them.
You can't trick them.
They see what they want to see, Kaltane said again.
The men closing in on either side grew nearer with every uneven heartbeat.
This is insane, Elide breathed. It'll never work.
Take off your robe and give it to the lady, Manon ordered. Do it now.
No room for disobedience. So Elide listened, blushing at her own nakedness, trying to cover herself. Kaltane merely let her black dress slip from her shoulders. It rippled on the ground. Her body, what they had done to her body, the bruises on her, the thinness. Kaltane wrapped herself in the robe, her face empty again. Elide slid on the gown, its fabric horribly cold when it should have been warm. Kaltane knelt before one of the dead guards.
Oh, gods. Those were corpses lying there.
And ran her hand over the hole in the guard's neck. She smeared and flicked blood over her face, her neck, her arms, the robe. She ran it through her hair, tugging it forward, hiding her face until bits of blood were all that could be seen, folding her shoulders inward until Kaltane looked like Elide.
You could be sisters,
Vernon had said. Now they could be twins.
Please, come with us, Aleed whispered.
Kaltain laughed quietly. Dagger, Blackbeak. Manon pulled out a dagger. Kaltain sliced it deep into the hideous scarred lump in her arm.
In your pocket, girl,
Kaltain said to her. Aleed reached into the dress and pulled out a scrap of dark fabric, frayed and ripped at the edges, as if it had been torn from something. Aleed held it toward the lady as Kaltain reached into her arm. No expression of pain on that beautiful bloodied face, and pulled out a glimmering sliver of dark stone. Kaltain's red blood dripped off it. Carefully, the lady set it onto the scrap of fabric Aleed held out, and folded Aleed's fingers around it. A dull, strange thudding pounded through Aleed as she grasped the shard.
What is that?
Manon asked, sniffing subtly. Kaltain just squeezed Aleed's fingers.
You find Selena Sardothian. Give her this. No one else.
No one else. Tell her that you can open any door if you have the key.
And tell her to remember her promise to me,
to punish them all. When she asks why, tell her I said that they would not let me bring the cloak she gave me, but I kept a piece of it. To remember that promise she made. To remember to repay her for a warm cloak in a cold dungeon. Kaltain stepped away.
We can take you with us, Aleed tried again.
A small, hateful smile.
I have no interest in living, not after what they did. I don't think my body could survive without their power.
Kaltain huffed a laugh.
I shall enjoy this, I think.
Manon tugged Aleed to her side. They'll notice you without the chains.
They'll be dead before they do, Kaltain said. I suggest you run.
Manon didn't ask questions, and Aleed didn't have time to say thank you before the witch grabbed her, and they ran. She was a wolf. She was death, devourer of worlds. The guards found her curled up in the cell, shuddering at the carnage. They didn't ask questions, didn't look twice at her face before they hauled her down the hall and into the catacombs. Such screaming here, such terror and despair. But the horrors under the other mountains were worse, so much worse. Too bad she would not have the opportunity to also spare them, slaughter them. She was a void, empty without that sliver of power that built and ate and tore apart worlds inside of her. His precious gift, his key, he had called her. A living gate, he promised. Soon, he had said he would add the other, and then find the third, so that the king inside him might rule again. They led her into a chamber with a table in the center. A white sheet covered it, and men watched as they shoved her onto the table. The altar, they chained her down. With the blood on her, they did not notice the cut on her arm or whose face she wore. One of the men came forward with a knife, clean and sharp and gleaming.
This won't take but a few minutes.
Kaltain smiled up at him, smiled broadly, now that they had brought her into the bowels of this hellhole. The man paused. A red-haired young man walked into the room, reeking of the cruelty born in his human heart, and amplified by the demon inside him. He froze as he saw her. He opened his mouth. Kaltain Rompier unleashed her shadow fire upon them all. This was not the ghost of shadow fire they had made her kill with. The reason why they had first approached her, lied to her when they invited her to that glass castle. But the real thing, the fire she had harbored since magic had returned. Golden flame now turned to black. The room became cinders. Kaltain pushed the chains off her as though they were cobwebs, and arose. She disrobed as she walked out of the room. Let them see what had been done to her, the body they'd wasted. She made it two steps into the hall before they noticed her, and beheld the black flames rippling off her. Death, devourer of worlds. The hallway turned to black dust. She strode toward the chamber where the screaming was loudest, where female cries leaked through the iron door. The iron did not heat, did not bend to her magic. So she melted an archway through the stones. Monsters and witches and men and demons whirled. Kaltane flowed into the room, spreading her arms wide, and became shadow fire, became freedom and triumph, became a promise hissed in a dungeon beneath a glass castle. Punish them all. She burned the cradles. She burned the monsters within. She burned the men and their demon princes. And then she burned the witches, who looked at her with gratitude in their eyes and embraced the dark flame. Kaltane unleashed the last of her shadow fire, tipping her face to the ceiling, toward a sky she'd never see again. She took out every wall and every column. As she brought it all crashing and crumbling around them, Kaltane smiled, and at last burned herself into ash on a phantom wind. Manon ran, but Elide was so slow, so painfully slow with that leg. If Kaltane unleashed her shadow fire before they got out. Manon grabbed Elide and hauled her over a shoulder, the beaded dress cutting into Manon's hand as she sprinted up the stairs. Elide didn't say a word as Manon reached the dungeon landing and beheld Astarin and Sorrel finishing off the last of the soldiers. Run, she barked. They were coated in that black blood, but they'd live. Up and up, they hurtled out of the dungeons, even as Elide became a weight borne on pure defiance of the death surely racing toward them from levels below. There was a shudder.
Faster.
Her second made it to the giant dungeon doors and hurled herself against them, heaving them open. Manon and Sorrel dashed through. Astarin shoved them sealed with a bang. It would only delay the flame a second, if that. Up and up, toward the Aerie. Another shudder and a boom, screaming and heat. Down the halls they flew, as if the god of wind were pushing at their heels. They hit the base of the Aerie Tower. The rest of the 13 were gathered in the stairwell, waiting. Into the skies, Manon ordered as they took the stairs, one after one, a lead so heavy now that she thought she'd drop her. Only a few more feet to the top of the tower, where the wyverns were hopefully saddled and prepared. They were. Manon hurtled for Abraxos and shoved the shuddering girl into the saddle. She climbed up behind her as the 13 scrambled onto their mounts. Wrapping her arms around Elide, Manon dug her heels into Abraxos's side. Fly now, she roared. Abraxos leaped through the opening, soaring up and out, the 13 leaping with them, wings beating hard, beating wildly. Morath exploded. Black flame erupted, taking out stone and metal, racing higher and higher. People shouted and then were silenced, as even rock melted. The air hollowed out and ruptured in Manon's ears, and she curled her body around Elide's, twisting them so the heat of the blast singed her own back. The airy tower was incinerated and crumbled away behind them. The blast sent them tumbling, but Manon gripped the girl tight, clenching the saddle with her thighs as hot, dry wind blasted past them. Abraxos screeched, shifting and soaring into the gust. When Manon dared to look, a third of Morath was smoldering ruin. Where those catacombs had once been, where those yellow legs had been tortured and broken, where they had bred monsters, there was nothing left. Chapter 83. Aelin slept for 3 days. 3 days, while Rowan sat by her bed, healing his leg as best he could, while the abyss of his power refilled. Adian assumed control of the castle, imprisoning any surviving guards. Most, Rowan had been viciously pleased to learn, had been killed in the storm of glass the prince had called down. Kaol had survived by some miracle, probably the Eye of Elena, which they'd found tucked into his pocket. It was an easy guess who had put it there, though Rowan honestly wondered if, when the captain woke up, he might wish he hadn't made it after all. He'd encountered enough soldiers who felt that way. After Aelin had so spectacularly leashed the people of Rifthold, they found Lorkhan waiting by the doors to the stone castle. The queen hadn't even noticed him, as she sank to her knees and cried and cried, until Rowan scooped her into his arms and, limping slightly, carried her through the frenzied halls, servants dodging them as Adian led the way to her old rooms. It was the only place to go. Better to establish themselves in their enemy's former stronghold than to retreat to the warehouse apartment. A servant named Philippa was asked to look after the prince, who had been unconscious the last time Rowan had seen him, when he plummeted to earth and Rowan's wind stopped his fall. He didn't know what had happened in the castle. Through her weeping, Aelin hadn't said anything. She had been unconscious by the time Rowan reached her lavish suite of rooms, not even stirring as he kicked open the locked door. His leg had burned in pain, the rough healing he'd done barely holding the wound together, but he didn't care. He'd barely set Aelin on the bed before Lorcan's scent hit him again, and he whirled, snarling. But there was already someone in Lorcan's face, blocking the warrior's path into the queen's bedchamber, Lysandra.
"May I help you?"
the courtesan had said sweetly. Her dress was in shreds, and blood both black and red coated most of her. But she held her head high and her back straight. She'd made it as far as the upper levels of the stone castle before the glass one above it had exploded, and showed no plans of leaving anytime soon. Rowan had thrown a shield of hard air around Aelin's room as Lorcan stared down at Lysandra, his blood-splattered face impassive.
"Out of my way, shifter."
Lysandra had held up a slender hand, and Lorcan paused. The shapeshifter pressed her other hand against her stomach, her face blanching. But then she smiled and said,
"You forgot to say please."
Lorcan's dark brows flattened.
"I don't have time for this."
He made to step around her, shove her aside. Lysandra vomited black blood all over him. Rowan didn't know whether to laugh or cringe as Lysandra, panting, gaped at Lorcan, and at the blood on his neck and chest. Slowly, too slowly, Lorcan looked down at himself. She pressed a hand over her mouth.
"I am so sorry."
Lorcan didn't even step out of the way as Lysandra vomited on him again, black blood and bits of gore now on the warrior and on the marble floor. Lorcan's dark eyes flickered. Rowan decided to do them both a favor and joined them in the antechamber, shutting the queen's bedroom door behind him as he stepped around the puddle of blood, bile, and gore. Lysandra gagged again, and wisely darted to what looked to be a bathing room off the foyer. All of the men and demons she'd wasted, it seemed, did not sit well in her human stomach. The sounds of her purging leaked out from beneath the bathing room door.
"You deserved that," Rowan said.
Lorcan didn't so much as blink.
"That's the thanks I get."
Rowan leaned against the wall, crossing his arms and keeping the weight off his now healing leg.
"You knew we'd tried to use those tunnels," Rowan said. "And yet you lied about the word hounds being dead. I should rip out your god's damned throat."
"Go ahead.
Try."
Rowan remained against the door, calculating every move of his former commander. A fight right here, right now, would be too destructive, and too dangerous with his queen unconscious in the room behind him.
"I wouldn't have given a shit about it if it had just been me. But when you let me walk into that trap, you endangered my queen's life."
"Looks like she did just fine."
"And the life of a brother in my court."
Lorcan's mouth tightened. Barely.
"That's why you came to help, isn't it?"
Rowan said.
"You saw Adian when we left the apartment. I did not know Gavriel's son would be in that tunnel with you. Until it was too late."
Of course. Lorcan would never have warned them about the trap after learning Adian would be there. Not in 1,000 years would Lorcan ever admit to a mistake.
"I wasn't aware that you even cared."
"Gavriel is still my brother,"
Lorcan said, his eyes flashing.
"I would have faced him with dishonor if I had let his son die."
Only for honor, for the blood bond between them, not for saving this continent. The same twisted bond was leading him now to destroy the keys before Maeve could acquire them. Rowan had no doubt that Lorkin meant to do it, even if Maeve killed him for it later.
What are you doing here, Lorkin? Didn't you get what you wanted?
A fair question, and a warning. The male was now inside his queen's suite, closer than most people in her court would ever get. Rowan began a silent countdown in his head. 30 seconds seemed generous. Then he would throw Lorkin out on his ass.
It's not over, the warrior said. Not even close.
Rowan lifted his brows.
Idle threats.
But Lorkin had only shrugged and walked out, covered in Lysandra's vomit, and did not look back before disappearing down the hall. That had been 3 days ago. Rowan hadn't seen or scented Lorkin since. Lysandra mercifully had stopped hurling her guts up, or someone else's guts, he supposed. The shapeshifter had claimed a room across the hall, between the two chambers in which the Crown Prince and Kaol still slept. After what Aelin and the Crown Prince had done, the magic they'd wielded together and alone, 3 days of sleep was hardly surprising. Yet it drove Rowan out of his mind. There were so many things he needed to say to her, though perhaps he would just ask how the hell she'd gotten stabbed in the side. She'd healed herself, and he wouldn't have even known were it not for the rips in the ribs, back, and arms of that black assassin's suit. When the healer had inspected the sleeping queen, she'd found that Aelin had healed herself too quickly, too desperately, and had sealed her flesh around some shards of glass in her back, watching as the healer stripped her naked, then began carefully opening the dozens of little wounds to dig out the glass, almost made him tear down the walls. Aelin slept through it, which he supposed was a mercy, given how deep the healer had to dig to get the glass out.
She's lucky it didn't hit anything permanent, the healer had said.
Once every shard was gone, Rowan had used his strained magic to slowly, so slowly, damn him, heal the wounds again. It left the tattoo on her back in ribbons. He'd have to fill it in when she recovered, and teach her more about battlefield healing. If she ever woke up. Sitting in a chair beside her bed, Rowan towed off his boots and rubbed at the faint, lingering soreness in his leg. Adian had just finished giving a report about the current status of the castle. 3 days later, the general still hadn't spoken about what had happened, that he'd been willing to lay down his life to protect Rowan from the Volg foot soldiers, or that the King of Otterlin was dead. As far as the former, Rowan had thanked him for that in the only way he knew how, offering Adian one of his own daggers, forged by the greatest of Dorinel's blacksmiths. Adian had initially refused, insisting he needed no thanks, but had worn the blade at his side ever since. But in regard to the latter, Rowan had asked just once what the general felt about the king being dead. Adian had merely said he wished the bastard had suffered longer. But dead was dead, so it was fine by him. Rowan wondered if he truly meant it. But Adian would tell him when he was good and ready. Not all wounds could be healed with magic. Rowan knew that too well. But they did heal. Eventually. And the wounds on this castle, on the city, those would heal too. He'd stood on battlefields after the killing had stopped, the earth still wet with blood, and lived to see the scars slowly heal, decade after decade, on the land, the people. So too would Rifthold heal. Even if Adian's latest report on the castle was grim, most of the staff had survived, along with a few courtiers. But it seemed that a good number of those who had remained at court, courtiers Adian had known to be worthless scheming devils, hadn't made it, as if the prince had wiped clean the stain from his castle. Rowan shuddered at the thought, gazing at the doors Adian had vacated. The Crown Prince had such tremendous power. Rowan had never seen its like. He'd need to find a way to train it, hone it, or risk it destroying him. And Aelin, that brilliant, insane fool, had taken a tremendous risk in weaving her power with his. The prince had raw magic that could be shaped into anything. Aelin could have burnt herself out in a second. Rowan turned his head and glared at her, and found Aelin glaring back.
I save the world,
Aelin said, her voice like gravel.
And yet I wake up to you being pissy.
It was a group effort, Rowan said from a chair nearby. And I'm pissy for about 20 different reasons, most of them having to do with you making some of the most reckless decisions I've ever—
Dorian,
she blurted.
Is Dorian—
Fine. Asleep. He's been out as long as you.
Kael?
Asleep. Recovering, but alive.
A weight eased from her shoulders. And then, she looked at the Fae Prince and understood that he was unharmed, that she was in her old room, that they weren't in chains or collars, and that the king, what the king had said before he died.
Fireheart,
Rowan murmured, starting from his chair. But she shook her head. The movement made her skull throb. She took a steadying breath, wiping at her eyes. Gods, her arm ached. Her back ached. Her side ached.
No more tears, she said. No more weeping.
She lowered her hands to the blankets.
Tell me everything.
So he did. About the Hellfire, and the Wordhounds, and Lorcan. And then the past 3 days, of organizing and healing. And Lysandra scaring the living shit out of everyone by shifting into a ghost leopard any time one of Dorian's courtiers stepped out of line. When he'd finished, Rowan said,
If you can't talk about it, you don't—
I need to talk about it.
To him. If only to him. The words tumbled out, and she did not cry as she explained what the king had said, what he'd claimed, what Dorian had still done. Rowan's face remained drawn, thoughtful throughout. At last she said,
3 days?
Rowan nodded gravely.
Distracting Adian with running the castle is the only way I've kept him from chewing on the furniture.
She met those pine green eyes, and he opened his mouth again. But she made a small noise.
Before we say anything else, she glanced at the door. I need you to help me get to the bathing room, or else I'm going to wet myself.
Rowan burst out laughing. She glared at him again as she sat up, the movement agonizing, exhausting. She was naked save for the clean undergarments someone had stuffed her into. But she supposed she was decent enough. He'd seen every part of her anyway. Rowan was still chuckling as he helped her up, letting her lean against him as her legs, useless, wobbling like a newborn fawn, tried to work. It took her so long to go 3 steps that she didn't object when he swept her up and carried her to the bathing room. She growled when he tried to set her on the toilet itself. And he left with his hands upraised, his eyes dancing as if to say,
Can you blame me for trying? You might very well fall into it instead.
He laughed once more at the profanities in her eyes. And when she was done, she managed to stand and walk the 3 steps to the door before he hefted her in his arms again. No limp, she realized. His leg, mercifully, was mostly healed. Her arms draped around him. She pressed her face into his neck as he carried her toward the bed and breathed in his scent. When he made to set her down, she held on to him, a silent request. So Rowan sat on the bed, holding her in his lap as he stretched out his legs and settled into the rows of pillows. For a moment, they said nothing. Then,
So this was your room, and that was the secret passage.
A lifetime ago. A whole other person ago. You don't sound impressed.
After all your stories, it just seems so ordinary.
Most people would hardly call this castle ordinary. A huff of laughter warmed her hair. She grazed her nose against the bare skin of his neck.
I thought you were dying,
he said roughly. She held him tighter, even if it made her back ache.
I was.
Please don't ever do that again.
It was her turn to puff out a laugh.
Next time, I'll just ask Dorian not to stab me.
But Rowan pulled back, scanning her face.
I felt it. I felt every second of it. I went out of my mind.
She brushed a finger along his cheek.
I thought something had gone wrong for you, too. I thought you might be dead or hurt, and it killed me not to be able to go to you.
Next time we need to save the world, we do it together.
She smiled faintly. Deal. He shifted his arm so he could brush her hair back. His fingers lingered along her jaw.
You make me want to live too, Aelin Galathinius,
he said.
Not exist, but live.
He cupped her cheek and took a steadying breath, as if he'd thought about every word these past 3 days, over and over again.
I spent centuries wandering the world, from empires to kingdoms to wastelands, never settling, never stopping, not for one moment. I was always looking toward the horizon, always wondering what waited across the next ocean, over the next mountain. But I think that whole time, all those centuries, I was just looking for you.
He brushed away a tear that escaped her then, and Aelin gazed at the Fae Prince who held her, at her friend, who had traveled through darkness and despair and ice and fire with her. She didn't know which one of them moved first, but then Rowan's mouth was on hers, and Aelin gripped his shirt, pulling him closer, claiming him as he claimed her. His arms wrapped tighter around her, but gently, so careful of the wounds that ached. He brushed his tongue against hers, and she opened her mouth to him. Every movement of their lips was a whisper of what was to come once they were both healed, and a promise. The kiss was slow, thorough, as if they had all the time in the world, as if they were the only ones in it. Realizing he'd forgotten to tell Rowan about the letter he'd received from the Bane, Adie and Ashriver walked into Aelin's suite of rooms in time to see that Aelin was awake, finally awake, and lifting her face to Rowan's. They were sitting on the bed, Aelin in Rowan's lap, the Fae warrior's arms locked around her, as he looked at her the way she deserved to be looked at. And when they kissed, deeply, without hesitation. Rowan didn't so much as glance Adian's way before a wind snapped through the suite, slamming the bedroom door in Adian's face. Point taken. A strange, ever-changing female scent hit him, and Adian found Lysandra leaning against the hallway door. Tears gleamed in her eyes even as she smiled. She gazed at the closed bedroom door, as if she could still see the prince and queen inside.
That,
she said, more to herself than to him.
That is what I am going to find one day.
A gorgeous Fae warrior,
Adian said, shifting a bit. Lysandra chuckled, wiping away her tears, and gave him a knowing look before walking away. Apparently, Dorian's golden ring was gone, and Aelin knew exactly who had been responsible for the momentary blackness when she'd hit the ground as the castle collapsed, who had bestowed the unconsciousness, courtesy of a blow to the back of her head. She didn't know why Lorcan hadn't killed her, but she didn't particularly care, not when he was long gone. She supposed he'd never promised not to steal the ring back, though he'd also never made them verify that the amulet of Orinth wasn't a fake. Too bad she wouldn't be there to see his face when he realized it. The thought was enough to make Aelin smile the next day, despite the door she stood before, despite who waited behind it. Rowan lingered at the end of the hallway, guarding the only way in or out. He gave her a nod, and even from the distance she read the words in his eyes.
I'll be right here. One shout, and I'll be at your side.
She rolled her eyes at him.
Overbearing territorial fae beast.
She'd lost track of how long they'd kissed for, how long she'd lost herself in him. But then she'd taken his hand and laid it on her breast, and he'd growled in a way that made her toes curl and her back arch, and then wince at the remnant of pain flickering in her body. He had pulled back at that wince, and when she'd tried to convince him to keep going, he'd told her that he had no interest in betting an invalid, and since they'd already waited this long, she could cool her heels and wait some more. Until she was able to keep up with him, he'd added with a wicked grin. Aelin shoved away the thought with another glare in Rowan's direction, loosed a steadying breath, and pushed down on the handle. He was standing by the window,
overlooking the wrecked gardens where servants were struggling to repair the catastrophic damage he'd caused.
"Hello, Dorian," she said.
Chapter 84. Dorian Havilliard had awoken alone, in a room he didn't recognize. But he was free, even though a pale band of skin now marred his neck. For a moment, he had lain in bed, listening. No screaming, no wailing, just a few birds tentatively chirping outside the window, summer sunshine leaking in, and silence, peace. There was such an emptiness in his head, a hollowness in him. He'd even put a hand over his heart to see if it was beating. The rest was a blur, and he lost himself in it, rather than think about that emptiness. He bathed, he dressed, and he spoke to Adie and Ashriver, who looked at him as if he had three heads, and who was apparently now in charge of castle security. Kaol was alive, but still recovering, the general said, not yet awake. And maybe that was a good thing, because Dorian had no idea how he'd face his friend. How he'd explain everything. Even when most of it was mere shards of memory, pieces he knew would further break him if he ever put them together. A few hours later, Dorian was still in that bedroom, working up the nerve to survey what he'd done, the castle he'd destroyed, the people he'd killed. He'd seen the wall, proof of his enemy's power and mercy. Not his enemy. Aelin. "Hello, Dorian," she said. He turned from the window as the door shut behind her. She lingered by the door, in a tunic of deep blue and gold, unbuttoned with careless grace at the neck, her hair loose at her shoulders, her brown boots scuffed. But the way she held herself, the way she stood with utter stillness, a queen looked out at him. He didn't know what to say, where to begin. She prowled for the little sitting area where he stood. "How are you feeling?" Even the way she talked was slightly different. He'd already heard what she'd said to his people, the threats she'd made and the order she'd demanded.
"Fine,"
he managed to say. His magic rumbled deep inside him, but it was barely more than a whisper, as if it was drained, as if it was as empty as him. "You wouldn't be hiding in here, would you?" she said, slumping into one of the low chairs on the pretty ornate rug.
"Your men put me in here so they could keep an eye on me," he said, remaining by the window. "I wasn't aware that I was allowed to leave."
Perhaps that was a good thing, considering what the demon prince had made him do. "You can leave whenever you please. This is your castle, your kingdom."
"Is it?"
he dared ask. "You're the king of Otterland now," she said softly, but not gently. "Of course it is."
His father was dead.
Not even a body was left to reveal what they'd done that day. Aelin had publicly declared she'd killed him, but Dorian knew he'd ended his father when he shattered the castle. He had done it for Kaol, and for Sorsha, and he knew she'd claimed the kill because to tell his people that he'd killed his father.
"I still have to be crowned,"
he said at last. His father had stated such wild things in those last few moments, things that changed everything and nothing. She crossed her legs, leaning back in her seat, but there was nothing casual in her face. "You say that like you hope it doesn't happen." Dorian stifled the urge to touch his neck and confirm that the collar was still gone, and clenched his hands behind his back.
"Do I deserve to be king after all I did? After all that happened?"
"Only you can answer that question."
"Do you believe what he said?"
Aelin sucked on her teeth. "I don't know what to believe."
"Parrington's going to war with me. With us. My being king won't stop that army."
"We'll figure it out," she loosed a breath. "But your being king is the first step of it." Beyond the window, the day was bright, clear. The world had ended and begun anew, and yet nothing at all had changed either. The sun would still rise and fall, the seasons would still change, heedless of whether he was free or enslaved, prince or king. Heedless of who was alive and who was gone, the world would keep moving on. It didn't seem right, somehow.
"She died,"
he said, his breathing ragged, the room crushing him.
"Because of me."
Aelin got to her feet in a smooth movement and walked to where he stood by the window, only to tug him down onto the sofa beside her.
"It is going to take a while, and it might never be right again, but you..."
She gripped his hand, as if he hadn't used those hands to hurt and maim, to stab her. "You will learn to face it, and to endure it. What happened, Dorian, was not your fault."
"It was. I tried to kill you, and what happened to Kaol?"
"Kaol chose. He chose to buy you time because your father was to blame. Your father, and the Vog Prince inside him, did that to you. And to Sorsha."
He almost vomited at the name. It would dishonor her to never say it again. To never speak of her again. But he didn't know if he could let out those two syllables without a part of him dying over and over again.
"You're not going to believe me," Aelin went on. "What I've just said. You're not going to believe me. I know it, and that's fine. I don't expect you to. When you're ready, I'll be here."
"You're the Queen of Terrasen. You can't be."
"Says who? We are the masters of our own fates. We decide how to go forward."
She squeezed his hand.
"You're my friend, Dorian."
A flicker of memory, from the haze of darkness and pain, and fear.
"I came back for you."
"You both came back,"
he said. Her throat bobbed.
"You pulled me out of Endovir. I figured I could return the favor."
Dorian looked at the carpet, at all the threads woven together.
"What do I do now?"
They were gone. The woman he'd loved, and the man he'd hated. He met her stare. No calculation, no coldness, no pity in those turquoise eyes. Just unflinching honesty, as there had been from the very start with her.
"What do I do?"
She had to swallow before she said,
"You light up the darkness."
Kaol Westfall opened his eyes. The afterworld looked an awful lot like a bedroom in the stone castle. There was no pain in his body, at least. Not like the pain that had slammed into him, followed by warring blackness and blue light, and then nothing at all. He might have yielded to the exhaustion that threatened to drag him back into unconsciousness. But someone, a man, let out a rasping breath, and Kaol turned his head. There were no sounds, no words in him as he found Dorian seated in a chair beside the bed. Bruised shadows were smudged beneath his eyes. His hair was unkempt, as if he'd been running his hands through it. But beyond his unbuttoned jacket, there was no collar, only a pale line marring his golden skin. And his eyes, haunted, but clear, alive. Kaol's vision burned and blurred. She had done it. Aelin had done it. Kaol's face crumpled.
"I didn't realize I looked that bad," Dorian said, his voice raw.
He knew then that the demon inside the prince was gone. Kaol wept. Dorian surged from the chair and dropped to his knees beside the bed. He grabbed Kaol's hand, squeezing it as he pressed his brow against his.
"You were dead,"
the prince said, his voice breaking.
"I thought you were dead."
Kaol at last mastered himself, and Dorian pulled back far enough to scan his face.
"I think I was,"
he said.
"What? What happened?"
So Dorian told him. Aelin had saved his city. And saved his life, too, when she'd slipped the Eye of Elaena into his pocket. Dorian's hand gripped Kaol's a bit tighter.
"How do you feel?" "Tired,"
Kaol admitted, flexing his free hand. His chest ached from where the blast had hit him, but the rest of him felt... he didn't feel anything. He couldn't feel his legs, his toes.
"The healers that survived,"
Dorian said very quietly,
"said you shouldn't even be alive. Your spine. I think my father broke it in a few places. They said Amethy might have been able to. A flicker of rage. But she died.
Panic, slow and icy, crept in. He couldn't move, couldn't.
Rowan healed two of the injuries higher up. You would have been paralyzed,
Dorian choked on the word.
From the neck down, otherwise. But the lower fracture. Rowan said it was too complex, and he didn't dare try to heal it, not when he could make it worse.
Tell me there's a butt coming,
Kaol managed to say. If he couldn't walk, if he couldn't move.
We won't risk sending you to Wendlin, not with Maeve there. But the healers at the Torre Chesme could do it.
I'm not going to the southern continent.
Not now that he'd gotten Dorian back. Not now that they'd all somehow survived.
I'll wait for a healer here.
There are no healers left here. Not magically gifted ones. My father and Parrington wiped them out.
Cold flickered in those sapphire eyes. Kaol knew that what his father had claimed, what Dorian had still done to him despite it, would haunt the prince for a while. Not the prince, the king.
The Torre Chesme might be your only hope of walking again,
Dorian said.
I'm not leaving you. Not again.
Dorian's mouth tightened.
You never left me, Kaol.
He shook his head once, sending tears slipping down his face.
You never left me.
Kaol squeezed his friend's hand. Dorian glanced toward the door a moment before a hesitant knock sounded, and smiled faintly. Kaol wondered just what Dorian's magic allowed him to detect. But then the king wiped away his tears and said,
Someone's here to see you.
The handle quietly lowered, and the door cracked open, revealing a curtain of inky black hair and a tan, pretty face. Nezrin beheld Dorian and bowed deeply, her hair swaying with her. Dorian rose to his feet, waving a hand in dismissal.
Adian might be the new head of castle security, but Miss Felique is my temporary captain of the guard. Turns out the guards find Adian's style of leadership to be...
What's the word, Nezrin? Nezrin's mouth twitched, but her eyes were on Kaol, as if he were a miracle, as if he were an illusion. Polarizing, Nezrin murmured, striding right for him, her gold and crimson uniform fitting her like a glove.
There's never been a woman in the King's Guard before,
Dorian said, heading for the door.
And since you're now Lord Kaol Westfall the King's Hand, I needed someone to fill the position. New traditions for a new reign.
Kaol broke Nezrin's wide-eyed stare to gape at his friend.
What?
But Dorian was at the door, opening it.
If I have to be stuck with king duty, then you're going to be stuck right there with me. So go to the Torre Chesme and heal fast, Kaol. Because we've got work to do.
The king's gaze flicked to Nezrin.
Fortunately, you already have a knowledgeable guide.
Then he was gone. Kaol stared up at Nezrin, who was holding a hand over her mouth.
Turns out I wound up breaking my promise to you after all,
he said,
since I technically can't walk out of this castle.
She burst into tears.
Remind me never to make a joke again,
he said, even as the crushing, squeezing panic set in.
His legs.
No.
No.
They wouldn't be sending him to the Torre Chesme unless they knew there was a possibility he would walk again. He would accept no other alternative. Nezrin's thin shoulders shook as she wept.
Nezrin,
he croaked.
Nezrin, please.
She slid onto the floor beside his bed and buried her face in her hands.
When the castle shattered, she said,
her voice cracking.
I thought you were dead. And when I saw the glass coming for me, I thought I'd be dead. But then the fire came, and I prayed she'd somehow saved you too.
Rowan had been the one who'd done that, but Kaol wasn't about to correct her. She lowered her hands, at last looking at his body beneath the blankets.
We will fix this. We will go to the southern continent, and I will make them heal you. I've seen the wonders they can do. And I know they can do it, and...
He reached for her hand.
Nezrin.
And now you're a lord,
she went on, shaking her head.
You were a lord before, I mean, but you are the king's second in command. I know it's...
I know we...
We'll figure it out,
Kaol said. She met his stare at last. I don't expect anything of you.
We'll figure it out. You might not even want a crippled man.
She pulled back. Do not insult me by assuming I'm that shallow or fickle. He choked on a laugh.
Let's have an adventure, Nezrin Falik.
Chapter 85. Aleed couldn't stop crying as the witches flew northward. She didn't care that she was flying, or that death loomed on every side. What Kaltain had done. She didn't dare open her clenched fist for fear the fabric and the little stone would be ripped away in the wind. At sunset, they landed somewhere in Oakwald. Aleed didn't care about that either. She lay down and passed into a deep sleep, still wearing Kaltain's dress, that bit of cloak clutched in her hand. Someone covered her with a cloak in the night, and when she awoke, there was a set of clothes, flying leathers, a shirt, pants, boots, beside her. The witches were sleeping, their wyverns a mass of muscle and death around them. None of them stirred as Aleed strode to the nearest stream, stripped off that dress, and sat in the water, watching the two pieces of her loose chain swaying in the current, until her teeth were chattering. When she had dressed, the clothes a bit big but warm, Aleed tucked that scrap of cloak and the stone it contained into one of her inner pockets. Selena Sardothian. She'd never heard that name. Didn't know where to start looking. But to repay the debt she owed Kaltain. Don't waste your tears on her, Manon said from a few feet away, a pack dangling from her clean hands. She must have washed off the blood and dirt the night before. She knew what she was doing. And it wasn't for your sake. Aleed wiped at her face. She still saved our lives, and put an end to those poor witches in the catacombs. She did it for herself, to free herself, and she was entitled to. After what they did, she was entitled to rip the entire damn world to shreds. Instead, she'd taken out a third of Morath. Manon was right. Kaltain hadn't cared if they'd cleared the blast.
What do we do now?
We're going back to Morath, Manon said plainly. But you're not. Aleed started. This is as far as we can take you without raising suspicions, Manon said. When we return, if your uncle survived, I'll tell him you must have been incinerated in the blast.
And with that blast, all evidence of what Manon and her 13 had done to get Aleed out of the dungeons would also have been erased. But to leave her here.
The world opened wide and brutal around her.
Where do I go?
Aleed breathed. Endless woods and hills surrounded them.
I can't read, and I have no map.
Go where you will. But if I were you, I'd head north, and stick to the forest. Stay out of the mountains. Keep going until you hit Terrasen.
That had never been part of the plan. But the king, Vernon...
The king of Otterlin is dead, Manon said. The world stopped. Aelin Galathinius killed him and shattered his glass castle.
Aleed covered her mouth with a hand, shaking her head. Aelin. Aelin.
She was aided, Manon went on, by Prince Adian Ashriver.
Aleed began sobbing.
And rumor has it Lord Ren Owlsbrook is working in the north as a rebel.
Aleed buried her face in her hands. Then there was a hard, iron-tipped hand on her shoulder. A tentative touch.
Hope,
Manon said quietly.
Aleed lowered her hands and found the witch smiling at her. Barely a tilt to her lips, but a smile. Soft and lovely. Aleed wondered if Manon even knew she was doing it.
But to go to Terrasen, things will get worse, won't they?
Aleed said. Manon's nod was barely perceptible.
South.
She could still go south, run far, far away. Now that Vernon thought she was dead, no one would ever come looking for her.
But Aelin was alive. And strong.
And maybe it was time to stop dreaming of running. Find Selena Sardothian. She would do that,
to honor Kaltain and the gift she'd been given. To honor the girls like them, locked in towers with no one to speak for them, no one who remembered them. But Manon had remembered her. No, she would not run.
Go north, Aleed,
Manon said, reading the decision in Aleed's eyes and extending the pack. They are in Rifthold, but I bet they won't be there for long. Get to Terrasen and lie low. Keep off the roads, avoid inns. There's money in that pack, but use it sparingly. Lie and steal and cheat if you have to, but get to Terrasen. Your queen will be there. I'd suggest not mentioning your mother's heritage to her. Aleed considered, shouldering the pack.
Having Blackbeak blood does not seem like such a horrible thing, she said quietly.
Those gold eyes narrowed.
No,
Manon said.
No, it does not.
How can I thank you?
It was a debt already owed, Manon said, shaking her head when Aleed opened her mouth to ask more. The witch handed her 3 daggers, showing her where to tuck one into her boot, storing one in her pack, and then sheathing the other at her hip. Finally, she bade Aleed to take off her boots, revealing the shackles she'd squeezed inside. Manon removed a small skeleton key and unlocked the chains, still clamped to her ankles. Cool, soft air caressed her bare skin, and Aleed bit her lip to keep from weeping again as she tugged her boots back on. Through the trees, the wyverns were yawning and grumbling, and the sounds of the 13 laughing flitted past. Manon looked toward them, that faint smile returning to her mouth. When Manon turned back, the heir of the Blackbeak Witch Clan said, "When war comes, which it will if Parrington survived, you should hope you do not see me again, Aleed Locken."
All the same, Aleed said, I hope I do.
She bowed to the wing leader. And to her surprise, Manon bowed back.
North,
Manon said. And Aleed supposed it was as much of a goodbye as she'd get.
North,
Aleed repeated, and set off into the trees. Within minutes, she'd passed beyond the sounds of the witches and their wyverns, and was swallowed up by Oakwald. She gripped the straps of her pack as she walked. Suddenly, the animals went silent, and the leaves rustled and whispered. A moment later, 13 great shadows passed overhead. One of them, the smallest, lingered, sweeping back a second time as if in farewell. Aleed didn't know if Abraxos could see through the canopy, but she raised a hand in farewell anyway. A joyous, fierce cry echoed in response, and then the shadow was gone. North. To Terrasen. To fight. Not run. To Aelin and Ren and Adian. Grown and strong. And alive. She did not know how long it would take, or how far she would have to walk. But she would make it. She would not look back. Walking under the trees, the forest buzzing around her, Aleed pressed a hand against the pocket inside her leather jacket, feeling the hard little lump tucked there. She whispered a short prayer to Aneth for wisdom, for guidance, and could have sworn a warm hand brushed her brow as if in answer. It straightened her spine, lifted her chin. Limping, Aleed began the long journey home. Chapter 86.
This is the last of your clothes, Lysandra said, towing the trunk that one of the servants had just dropped off. I thought I had a shopping problem. Don't you ever throw anything away?
From her perch on the velvet ottoman in the center of the enormous closet, Aelin stuck out her tongue. Thank you for getting it all, she said. There was no point in unpacking the clothes Lysandra had brought from her old apartment, just as there was no point in returning there. It didn't help that Aelin couldn't bring herself to leave Dorian alone, even if she'd finally managed to get him out of that room and walking around the castle. He looked like the living dead, especially with that white line around his golden throat. She supposed he had every right to. She'd been waiting for him outside of Kaol's room. When she heard Kaol speak at last, She had summoned Nezirin as soon as she'd mastered the tears of relief that had threatened to overwhelm her. After Dorian had emerged, when he looked at her, and his smile had crumpled, she'd taken the king right back into his bedroom and sat with him for a good long while. The guilt. That would be as heavy a burden for Dorian as his grief. Lysandra put her hands on her hips.
Any other tasks for me before I retrieve Evangeline tomorrow?
Aelin owed Lysandra more than she could begin to express, but she pulled a small box from her pocket. There's one more task, Aelin said, holding the box out to Lysandra. You'll probably hate me for it later, but you can start by saying yes.
Proposing to me? How unexpected.
Lysandra took the box, but didn't open it. Aelin waved a hand, her heart pounding.
Just open it.
With a wary frown, Lysandra opened the lid and cocked her head at the ring inside, the movement purely feline.
Are you proposing to me, Aelin Galathinius?
Aelin held her friend's gaze. There's a territory in the north, a small bit of fertile land that used to belong to the Alsbrook family. Adian took it upon himself to inform me that the Alsbrooks have no use for it. So it's been sitting open for a while. Aelin shrugged. It could use a lady. The blood drained from Lysandra's face.
What?
It's plagued by ghost leopards, hence the engraving on the ring. But I suppose if there were anyone capable of handling them, it'd be you. Lysandra's hands shook.
And the key symbol above the leopard?
To remind you of who now holds your freedom. You. Lysandra covered her mouth, staring at the ring, then at Aelin.
Are you out of your mind?
Most people would probably think so, but as the land was officially released by the Alsbrooks years ago, I can technically appoint you lady of it. With Evangeline as your heir, should you wish it. Her friend had not voiced any plans for herself or her ward beyond retrieving Evangeline, had not asked to come with them, to start over in a new land, a new kingdom. Aelin had hoped it meant she wanted to join them in Terrasen, but Lysandra sank to the carpeted floor, staring at the box, at the ring. I know it'll be a great deal of work.
I don't deserve this. No one will ever want to serve me.
Your people will resent you for appointing me. Aelin slid onto the ground, knee to knee with her friend, and took the box from the shapeshifter's trembling hands. She pulled out the gold ring that she'd commissioned weeks ago. It had only been ready this morning, when Aelin and Rowan had slipped out to retrieve it, along with the real word key.
There is no one who deserves it more, Aelin said,
grabbing her friend's hand and putting the ring on her finger. There is no one else I'd want guarding my back.
If my people cannot see the worth of a woman who sold herself into slavery for the sake of a child, who defended my court with no thought for her own life, then they are not my people, and they can burn in hell.
Lysandra traced a finger over the coat of arms that Aelin had designed.
What's the territory called?
I have no idea, Aelin said. Lysandria sounds good. So does Lysandris, or maybe Lysandraland. Lysandra gaped at her.
You are out of your mind.
Will you accept?
I don't know the first thing about ruling a territory, about being a lady.
Well, I don't know the first thing about ruling a kingdom. We'll learn together. She flashed her a conspirator's grin.
So?
Lysandra gazed at the ring, then lifted her eyes to Aelin's face, and threw her arms around her neck, squeezing tight. She took that as a yes. Aelin grimaced at the dull throb of pain, but held on. Welcome to the court, lady. Aelin honestly wanted nothing more than to climb into bed that evening, hopefully with Rowan beside her. But as they finished up dinner, their first meal together as a court, a knock sounded on the door. Adian was answering it before Aelin could so much as set down her fork. He returned with Dorian in tow, the king glancing between them all.
I wanted to see if you'd eaten.
Aelin pointed with her fork to the empty seat beside Lysandra. Join us.
I don't want to impose.
Sit your ass down, she told the new king of Otterlin. That morning, he'd signed a decree freeing all the conquered kingdoms from Otterlin's rule. She'd watched him do it, Adian holding her hand tightly throughout, and wished that Nehemia had been there to see it. Dorian moved to the table, amusement sparking in those haunted sapphire eyes. She introduced him again to Rowan, who bowed his head deeper than Aelin expected. Then she introduced Lysandra, explaining who she was and what she had become to Aelin, to her court. Adian watched them, his face tight, his lips a thin line. Their eyes met. 10 years later, and they were all sitting together at a table again, no longer children, but rulers of their own territories. 10 years later, and here they were, friends despite the forces that had shattered and destroyed them. Aelin looked at the kernel of hope glowing in that dining room, and lifted her glass. "To a new world," the Queen of Terrasen said. The King of Otterlin lifted his glass, such endless shadows dancing in his eyes, but there, a glimmer of life.
To freedom.
Chapter 87. The Duke survived. So did Vernon. A third of Morath had been blown out, and a good number of guards and servants with it, along with two covens and a lead Lochan. A solid loss, but not nearly as devastating as it might have been. Manon herself had spilled 3 drops of her own blood in thanks to the three-faced goddess, that most of the covens had been out on a training exercise that day. Manon stood in the Duke's council chamber, hands behind her back as the man ranted. "A major setback," he hissed at the other men who were assembled, ward leaders and councilmen. "It would take months to repair Morath, and with so many of their supplies incinerated, they would have to put their plans on hold." Day and night, men hauled away the stones piled high above the ruins of the catacombs, searching, Manon knew, for the body of a woman who was no more than ash and the stone she'd borne. Manon had not even told her 13, who now limped northward with that stone.
"Wing leader,"
the Duke snapped, and Manon lazily turned her eyes toward him.
"Your grandmother will be arriving in 2 weeks. I want your covens trained with the latest battle plans."
She nodded. "As you will it." Battles. There would be battles. Because even now that Dorian Havilyard was king, the Duke had no plans to let go. Not with this army. As soon as those witch towers were built and he found another source of shadow fire, Aelin Galathinius and her forces would be obliterated. Manon quietly hoped that a lead would not be on those battlefields. The council meeting was soon over, and Manon paused as she walked past Vernon on her way out. She put a hand on his shoulder, her nails digging into his skin, and he yelped as she brought her iron teeth close to his ear.
"Just because she is dead, Lord, do not think that I will forget what you tried to do to her."
Vernon paled.
"You can't touch me."
Manon dug her nails in deeper. "No, I can't," she purred into his ear. "But Aelin Galathinius is alive. And I hear that she has a score to settle." She yanked out her nails and squeezed his shoulder, setting the blood running down Vernon's green tunic before she stalked from the room.
"What now?" Asterin said,
as they studied the new Airy they'd commandeered from one of the lesser covens.
"Your grandmother arrives, and then we fight in this war?"
Manon gazed out the open archway to the ashy sky beyond.
"For now we stay. We wait for my grandmother to bring those towers."
She didn't know what she'd do when she saw her grandmother. She glanced sidelong at her second, that human hunter. How did he die? Asterin's eyes gleamed. For a moment, she said nothing. Then,
"He was old, very old. I think he went into the woods one day and lay down somewhere, and never came back. He would have liked that, I think. I never found his body."
But she'd looked. "What was it like?" Manon asked quietly. "To love." For love was what it had been. What Asterin, perhaps alone of all the Iron Teeth witches, had felt, had learned.
"It was like dying a little every day, It was like being alive, too. It was joy so complete it was pain. It destroyed me and unmade me and forged me. I hated it because I knew I couldn't escape it and knew it would forever change me. And that witchling, I loved her, too. I loved her in a way I cannot describe, other than to tell you that it was the most powerful thing I've ever felt. Greater than rage, than lust, than magic. A soft smile. I'm surprised you're not giving me the obedience, discipline, brutality speech.
Made into monsters.
Things are changing, Manon said.
Good, Asterin said.
We're immortals. Things should change. And often. Or they'll get boring.
Manon lifted her brows, and her second grinned. Manon shook her head and grinned back.
Chapter 88. With Rowan circling high above the castle on watch, and with their departure scheduled for dawn, Aelin took it upon herself to make one last trip to Elena's tomb as the clock struck 12. Her plans, however, were ruined. The way to the tomb was blocked by rubble from the explosion. She'd spent 15 minutes searching for a way in, with both her hands and her magic, but had no luck. She prayed Mort hadn't been destroyed, though perhaps the Skull Doorknocker would have embraced his strange immortal existence coming to an end at last. The sewers of Rifthold, apparently, were as clear of the Vog as the castle tunnels and catacombs, as if the demons had fled into the night when the king had fallen. For the moment, Rifthold was safe. Aelin emerged from the hidden passageway, wiping the dust off her.
You two make so much noise, it's ridiculous.
With her fey hearing, she'd detected them minutes ago. Dorian and Kaol were seated before her fireplace, the latter in a special wheeled chair that they'd acquired for him. The king looked at her pointed ears, the elongated canines, and lifted a brow.
You look good, Majesty.
She supposed he hadn't really noticed that day on the glass bridge, and she'd been in her human form until now. She grinned. Kaol turned his head. His face was gaunt, but a flicker of determination shone there. Hope. He would not let his injury destroy him.
I always look good, Aelin said, plopping onto the armchair across from Dorian's.
Find anything interesting down there?
Kaol asked. She shook her head.
I figured it wouldn't hurt to look one last time, for old time's sake.
And maybe bite Elena's head off, after she got answers to all her questions. But the ancient queen was nowhere to be found. The three of them looked at each other, and silence fell. Aelin's throat burned, so she turned to Kaol and said,
With Maeve and Parrington breathing down our necks, we might need allies sooner rather than later.
Especially if the forces in Morath block access to Eelway. An army from the southern continent could cross the narrow sea within a few days and provide reinforcements. Push Parrington from the south while we hammer from the north.
She crossed her arms. So I'm appointing you an official ambassador for Terrasen.
I don't care what Dorian says. Make friends with the royal family, woo them, kiss their asses, do whatever you have to do. But we need that alliance. Kaol glanced at Dorian in silent request. The king nodded, barely a dip of his chin.
I'll try.
It was the best answer she could hope for. Kaol reached into the pocket of his tunic and chucked the eye toward her. She caught it in a hand. The metal had been warped, but the blue stone remained.
Thank you,
he said hoarsely.
He was wearing that for months,
Dorian said as she tucked the amulet into her pocket.
Yet it never reacted. Even in peril. Why now?
Aelin's throat tightened.
Courage of the heart, she said. Elena once told me that courage of the heart was rare, and to let it guide me. When Kaol chose to...
She couldn't form the words. She tried again.
I think that courage saved him,
made the amulet come alive for him. It had been a gamble, and a fool's one, but it had worked. Silence fell again. Dorian said,
So here we are.
The end of the road, Aelin said with a half smile.
No,
Kaol said, his own smile faint, tentative.
The beginning of the next.
The following morning, Aelin yawned as she leaned against her gray mare in the castle courtyard. Once Dorian and Kaol had left last night, Lysandra had entered and passed out in her bed with no explanation for why or what she'd been doing beforehand. And since she was utterly unconscious, Aelin had just climbed into bed beside her. She had no idea where Rowan had curled up for the night, but she wouldn't have been surprised to look out her window and spy a white-tailed hawk perched on the balcony rail. At dawn, Adian had burst in, demanding why they weren't ready to leave.
To go home.
Lysandra had shifted into a ghost leopard and chased him out. Then she returned, lingering in her massive feline form, and again sprawled beside Aelin. They managed to get another 30 minutes of sleep before Adian came back and chucked a bucket of water on them. He was lucky to escape alive. But he was right. They had little reason to linger. Not with so much to do in the north, so much to plan and heal and oversee. They would travel until nightfall, where they'd pick up Evangeline at the Felix country home, and then continue north, hopefully uninterrupted, until they reached Terrison.
Home. She was going home.
Fear and doubt curled in her gut, but joy flickered alongside them. They'd readied themselves quickly, and now all that was left, she supposed, was goodbye. Kaol's injuries made taking the stairs impossible, but she'd crept into his room that morning to say goodbye, only to find Adian, Rowan, and Lysandra already there, chatting with him and Nezrin. When they'd left, Nezrin following them out, the captain had merely squeezed Aelin's hand and said,
"Can I see it?"
She knew what he meant, and had held up her hands before her. Ribbons and plumes and flowers of red and gold fire danced through his room, bright and glorious and elegant. Kaol's eyes had been lined with silver when the flames winked out.
"It's lovely,"
he said at last. She'd only smiled at him and left a rose of gold flame burning on his nightstand, where it would burn without heat until she was out of range. And for Nezrin, who had been called away on captain duty, Aelin had left another gift, an arrow of solid gold, presented to her last Yulmas as a blessing of Diana, her own ancestor. Aelin figured the sharpshooter would love and appreciate that arrow more than she ever would have anyway.
"Do you need anything else? More food?"
Dorian asked, coming to stand beside her. Rowan, Adian, and Lysandra were already mounting their horses. They'd packed light, taking only the barest supplies. Mostly weapons, including Damaris, which Kaol had given to Adian, insisting the ancient blade remain on these shores. The rest of their belongings would be shipped to Terrison. "With this group," Aelin said to Dorian, "it'll probably be a daily competition to see who can hunt the best." Dorian chuckled. Silence fell, and Aelin clicked her tongue. "You're wearing the same tunic you had on a few days ago. I don't think I ever saw you wear the same thing twice." A flicker in those sapphire eyes.
"I think I have bigger things to worry about now."
Will you be all right?"
"Do I have any option but to be?"
She touched his arm. "If you need anything, send word. It'll be a few weeks before we reach Orinth, but I suppose with magic returned, you can find a messenger to get word to me quickly."
"Thanks to you, and to your friends."
She glanced over her shoulder at them. They were all trying their best to look like they weren't eavesdropping. "Thanks to all of us," she said quietly, "and to you." Dorian gazed toward the city horizon, the rolling green foothills beyond.
"If you had asked me 9 months ago if I thought..."
He shook his head.
"So much has changed."
"And will keep changing," she said, squeezing his arm once. "But there are things that won't change. I will always be your friend."
His throat bobbed.
"I wish I could see her, just one last time, to tell her, to say what was in my heart."
"She knows," Aelin said,
blinking against the burning in her eyes.
I'll miss you, Dorian said. Though I doubt the next time we meet will be in such civilized circumstances.
She tried not to think about it. He gestured over her shoulder to her court.
Don't make them too miserable. They're only trying to help you.
She smiled. To her surprise, a king smiled back. Send me any good books that you read, she said.
Only if you do the same.
She embraced him one last time.
Thank you for everything,
she whispered. Dorian squeezed her, and then stepped away as Aelin mounted her horse and nudged it into a walk. She moved to the head of the company, where Rowan rode a sleek black stallion. The Fey Prince caught her eye.
Are you all right?
She nodded.
I didn't think saying goodbye would be so hard, and with everything that's to come.
We'll face it together, to whatever end.
She reached across the space between them and took his hand, gripping it tightly. They held on to each other as they rode down the barren path, through the gateway she'd made in the glass wall, and into the city streets, where people paused what they were doing and gaped or whispered or stared. But as they rode out of Rifthold, that city that had been her home and her hell and her salvation, as she memorized each street and building and face and shop, each smell and the coolness of the river breeze, she didn't see one slave, didn't hear one whip. And as they passed by the domed royal theater, there was music, beautiful, exquisite music, playing within. Dorian didn't know what awoke him. Perhaps it was that the lazy summer insects had stopped their nighttime buzzing. Or perhaps it was the chilled wind that slithered into his old tower room, ruffling the curtains. The moonlight gleaming on the clock revealed it was 3 a.m. The city was silent. He rose from the bed, touching his neck yet again, just to make sure. Whenever he woke from his nightmares, it took him minutes to tell if he was indeed awake, or if it was merely a dream, and he was still trapped in his own body, enslaved to his father and that Vog prince. He had not told Aelin or Kaol about the nightmares. Part of him wished he had. He could still barely remember what had happened while he'd worn that collar. He'd turned 20, and had no recollection of it. There were only bits and pieces, glimpses of horror and pain. He tried not to think about it, didn't want to remember. He hadn't told Kaol or Aelin that either. He already missed her, and the chaos and intensity of her court. He missed having anyone around at all. The castle was too big, too quiet, and Kaol was to leave in 2 days. He didn't want to think about what missing his friend would be like. Dorian padded onto his balcony, needing to feel the river breeze on his face, to know that this was real, and he was free. He opened the balcony doors, the stones cool on his feet, and gazed out at the raised grounds. He'd done that. He loosed a breath, taking in the glass wall as it sparkled in the moonlight. There was a massive shadow perched atop it. Dorian froze. Not a shadow, but a giant beast, its claws gripping the wall, its wings tucked into its body, shimmering faintly in the glow of the full moon. Shimmering, like the white hair of the rider atop it. Even from the distance, he knew she was staring right at him, her hair streaming to the side like a ribbon of moonlight, caught in the river breeze. Dorian lifted a hand, the other rising to his neck. No collar. The rider on the wyvern leaned down in her saddle, saying something to her beast. It spread its massive glimmering wings and leaped into the air. Each beat of its wings sent a hollowed-out booming gust of wind toward him. It flapped higher, her hair streaming behind her like a glittering banner, until they vanished into the night, and he couldn't hear its wings beating anymore. No one sounded the alarm, as if the world had stopped paying attention for the few moments they'd looked at each other. And through the darkness of his memories, through the pain and despair and terror he'd tried to forget, a name echoed in his head. Manon Blackbeak sailed into the starry night sky, Abraxos warm and swift under her, the blazingly bright moon,
the mother's full womb, above her. She didn't know why she'd bothered to go, why she'd been curious. But there had been the prince, no collar to be seen around his neck. And he had lifted his hand in greeting, as if to say, "I remember you." The winds shifted, and Abraxos rode them, rising higher into the sky, the darkened kingdom below passing by in a blur. Changing winds, a changing world. Perhaps a changing 13, too, and herself. She didn't know what to make of it. But Manon hoped they'd all survive it. She hoped. Chapter 89. For 3 weeks, they rode straight north, keeping off the main roads and out of the villages. There was no need to announce that Aelin was on her way back to Terrasen. Not until she saw her kingdom for herself, and knew what she faced, both from within and from what gathered down in Morath. Not until she had somewhere safe to hide the great, terrible thing in her saddlebag. With her magic, no one noticed the word key's presence. But Rowan would occasionally glance at the saddlebag and angle his head in inquiry. Each time, she'd silently tell him she was fine, and that she hadn't noticed anything strange regarding the amulet, or regarding the Eye of Elena, which she again wore at her throat. She wondered if Lorcan was indeed on his way to hunt down the second and third keys, perhaps where Parrington, Erewhon, had held them all along, if the king hadn't been lying. She had a feeling Lorcan would start looking in Morath, and prayed the Fey warrior would defy the odds stacked against him and emerge triumphant. It would certainly make her life easier, even if he'd one day come to kick her ass for deceiving him. The summer days grew cooler the farther north they rode. Evangeline, to her credit, kept pace with them, never complaining about having to sleep on a bedroll night after night. She seemed perfectly happy to curl up with Fleetfoot, her new protector and loyal friend. Lysandra used the journey to test out her abilities, sometimes flying with Rowan overhead, sometimes running as a pretty black dog alongside Fleetfoot, sometimes spending days in her ghost leopard form and pouncing on Adian whenever he least expected it. 3 weeks of grueling travel, but also three of the happiest weeks Aelin had ever experienced. She would have preferred a little more privacy, especially with Rowan, who kept looking at her in that way that made her want to combust. Sometimes, when no one was watching, he'd sneak up behind her and nuzzle her neck, or tug at her earlobe with his teeth, or just slide his arms around her and hold her against him, breathing her in. One night, just one god's damned night with him was all she wanted. They didn't dare stop at an inn, so she was left to burn, and to endure Lysandra's quiet teasing. The terrain grew steeper, hillier, and the world turned lush and green and bright, the rocks becoming jagged granite outcroppings. The sun had barely risen, as Aelin walked beside her horse, sparing it from having to carry her up a particularly steep hill. She was already on her second meal of the day, already sweaty and dirty and cranky. Fire magic, it turned out, came in rather handy while traveling, keeping them warm on the chill nights, lighting their fires and boiling their water. She would have killed for a tub big enough to fill with water and bathe in, but luxuries could wait.
"It's just up this hill,"
Adian said from her left. "What is?" she asked, finishing her apple and chucking the remains behind her. Lysandra, wearing the form of a crow, squawked in outrage as the core hit her. "Sorry," Aelin called. Lysandra cawed and soared skyward, Fleetfoot barking merrily at her, as Evangeline giggled from atop her shaggy pony. Adian pointed to the hill crest ahead.
"You'll see."
Aelin looked at Rowan, who had been scouting ahead for part of the morning as a white-tailed hawk. Now he walked beside her, guiding his black stallion along. He lifted his brows at her silent demand for information.
"I'm not going to tell you."
She glowered at him.
"Buzzard."
Rowan grinned. But with every step, Aelin did the calculations about what day it was, and,
they crested the hill and halted. Aelin released the reins and took a staggering step, the emerald grass soft underfoot. Adian touched her shoulder.
Welcome home, Aelin.
A land of towering mountains, the staghorns spread before them, with valleys and rivers and hills, a land of untamed wild beauty. Terrison. And the smell of pine and snow. How had she never realized that Rowan's scent was of Terrison, of home? Rowan came close enough to graze her shoulder and murmured,
I feel as if I've been looking for this place my entire life.
Indeed, with the wicked wind flowing fast and strong between the gray jagged staghorns in the distance, with the dense spread of Oakwald to their left, and the rivers and valleys sprawling toward those great northern mountains, it was paradise for a hawk, paradise for her.
Right there, Adian said,
pointing to a small weather-worn granite boulder carved with whorls and swirls.
Once we pass that rock, we're on Terrison soil.
Not quite daring to believe she wasn't still asleep, Aelin walked toward that rock, whispering the song of thanks to Mala Firebringer for leading her to this place, this moment. Aelin ran a hand over the rough rock, and the sun-warmed stone tingled as if in greeting. Then she stepped beyond the stone. And at long last, Aelin Ashriver Galathinius was home.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Queen of Shadows, written by Sarah J. Mass, performed by Elizabeth Evans, producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2015 by Sarah J. Mass. Production copyright 2015 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.